Morning.
Morning.
Today's scriptures are from the Contemporary English Version of the New Testament. In Romans 7, verses 15 through 25a, we hear the Apostle Paul say, "In fact, I don't understand why I act the way I do. I don't do what I know is right. I do the things I hate. Although I don't do what I know is right, I agree that the law is good. So I am not the one doing these evil things. The sin that lives in me is what does them. I know that my selfish desires won't let me do anything that is good. Even when I want to do right, I cannot. Instead of doing what I know is right, I do wrong. And so, if I do not do what I know is right, I am no longer the one doing these evil things. The sin that lives in me is what does them. The law has shown me that something in me keeps me from doing what I know is right. With my whole heart, I agree with the law of God. But in every part of me, I discover something fighting against my mind, and it makes me a prisoner of sin that controls everything I do. What a miserable person I am. Who will rescue me from this body that is doomed to die? Thank God, Jesus Christ will rescue me." And now the second reading in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 11, verses 16 through 19 and 28 through 30. Jesus says, "You people are like children sitting in the market and shouting to each other. We played the flute, but you would not dance. We sang a funeral song, but you would not mourn. John the Baptist did not go around eating and drinking, and you said, 'That man has a demon in him.' But the Son of Man goes around eating and drinking, and you say, 'That man eats and drinks too much.' He is even a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Yet wisdom is shown to be right by what it does. If you are tired from carrying heavy burdens, come to me and I will give you rest. Take the yoke I give you, put it on your shoulders and learn from me. I am gentle and humble and you will find rest. This yoke is easy to bear and this burden is light." And thus ends this readings.
Mahalo, Alex, for sharing that. Those scriptures, they're real interesting ones, and let me struggle through some of them with you all. First, I want to tell you about a story. It was the spring of 1988. I was a newly minted pastor over on Kauai, serving at Kapa'a United Church of Christ. And in the spring of that year, I was invited to be part of a conversation on Oahu that was intended to help reimagine tourism for Hawaii. Not sure exactly how it is that I got invited to that, but I was thrilled to be able to come there. As we began to think about together ways that we might be able to manage tourism better in 1988 for it to perhaps be more culturally appropriate, even spiritual in its approach. It was 2 days worth of presentations from people around the world, people that were experimenting with tourism, not just here in Hawaii, but in many different places, Fiji and in Europe. And I don't remember much that was said there. I do remember the conversations were far-reaching, but in reality, they must not have reached all that far, because most of us right now in 2020 in a post-pandemic world would be nostalgic for the tourism numbers of 1988, for the way in which tourism was being done in 1988. But what I do remember is a conversation that I had one evening around dinner with two visitors that were there from Germany. And I asked them in that meal, I said to them, "Do you foresee," this is 1988, "do you foresee a time when Germany would eventually be reunified? Do you see a time when the Berlin Wall might come down?" And they looked at me and they laughed at me. They scoffed at me, and they gave me all sorts of reasons why this could not possibly happen. And as people from West Germany at that time, they gave me reasons why, in fact, they would not even want it to happen. About 18 months later, in November of 1989, so not very far, not that many months afterwards, their ability, these two German friends as seers of the future, obviously was utterly being discounted as the Berlin Wall fell. Kirsten was able to be in Berlin just a few days after, and we have in our home a small piece of the Berlin Wall that she brought home from us. She was there on business, and we hold that as a cherished memento of that of possibility. of the possibility that we dare to dream, because in fact, that which seems impossible can indeed become possible. In fact, it was about 15 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall that the United Church of Christ created an ad campaign, and they tied into this very concept. They took the words that Gracie Allen, half of that wonderful comedic duo of Gracie Allen and George Burns, wrote to George Burns in her very last love letter before she passed away. And in that love letter, she ended it by saying, "George, don't ever put a period where God has put a comma." And the UCC seized a hold of that phrase, and they got permission to use it, and they strived to there from that day forward to be a denomination not of the period, but of the comma, a denomination of the possibility, a denomination of the prophet's dream, a denomination of the carpenter's call. Don't put a period where God has put a comma. 31 years ago, as that Berlin Wall came down, something that had been inconceivable just 18 months prior became the capstone of what began in the summer of 1989 as we watched the Iron Curtain fall apart throughout Europe. It was an amazing time 31 years ago when indeed we saw the reality that commas are always possible and that we should not pay attention to those periods that tell us this is the way it is and shall always be. And I think about now in the late spring and the early summer of 2020, 31 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and it feels to me like we are indeed in just such a moment of periods that we had been told will always be giving way to commas. As we watch Confederate statues being taken down in city after city across the mainland, as we watch bases, military bases named after Confederate generals having their names changed, as we watch the Washington Redskins finally take seriously the fact that their name must be changed. As we watch people of all persuasions, issues, genders, identities, colors, take to the streets to declare that Black Lives Matter. As we watch the demands for police reform and police demilitarization to be met not just with kind nods, oh yes, wouldn't that be nice, but actually the real beginnings of reform happening in one community after another. Listen to Donnie Williams, the new police chief of Wilmington, North Carolina. First day on his job, he fired three of his officers for racist and threatening remarks that they had made. And he said, "It is a big wave of reform that is coming. I don't want to be paddling against this reform, and I definitely don't want to get caught up in its rip current. I want to ride that wave. I want to be part of it. This is an opportunity for us to make policing better, not just for any community, but as a nation." Commas being inserted where once there were only periods. If you asked me just 2 months ago, if I thought of any of the events that I just noted would happen by midsummer of this year, I would have given it few if low odds at all, particularly in the midst of a pandemic, which we know is much more than a health crisis, but is an economic and a social crisis. Despite all of those expectations that would go with being in the midst of a pandemic, all of this has happened at the same time that we have figured out how to telecommute, how to worship online, how to consume less, how to eat more locally, how to look out for neighbors that we have long overlooked. And we have, in the midst of all that, awakened to the reality of the disproportionality that defines so much of our society and so much of our culture. And we have decided and we have come to agreements across community after community to recognize that is antithetical to the just and equitable aspirations enshrined by our foremothers and our forefathers when this nation was being conceived. And that should be antithetical to the next normal, that the new normal needs to be a new normal that does not have that disproportionality anymore. Like a rubber band, these days of commas and no periods have stretched us to new dimensions. And I speak for many of you when I say to you that I like these new dimensions. Kirsten and I were able on Friday night to tune into Disney Plus, and we saved ourselves $5,000 from flying to New York City to get a hotel room and go to see Hamilton on stage, and instead we saw it on the TV. And there are many wonderful songs there, but one of the ones that speaks so poignantly to this moment is when Eliza Hamilton, the new wife of Alexander Hamilton, shares with her husband, while the Revolutionary War is raging all around them, the news that they are expecting their first child. And she says, sings to him, look around at how lucky we are to be alive right now. Look around. In the midst of all that is happening, in the midst of the periods that the world wants to put in our face and say, this is the way that it shall always be, there are commas being put everywhere, and we are grasping that, and we are stretching ourselves to new dimensions. Look around. Do not let God, do not put a period where God has put a comma. And yet, and the biggest and yet I can say, the truth is, Paul is grappling with just such a reality. The more you stretch a rubber band, the more you stretch it, the more it longs to return to its earlier form. Look at Paul. Pre-road to Damascus, he is a scholar. He is taught by the very best. He is loyal to his faith to the point of zealotry. He fears nothing, will do anything for the cause that he's pledged himself to. And then on the road to Damascus, he gets smacked upside the head. God offers to him a new way of being. Grace swoops in with the force of a hurricane, and his life is utterly transformed. And this person, who had just days before been foaming at the mouth to arrest the followers of Jesus, this person who stood watch while the apostles of Jesus are being stoned to death, is now penning words like, love is patient and kind. It is not envious or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Paul, the most unlikely of converts to the gospel of love, becomes its primary voice. And he endeavors daily to not only just speak these words, but to live these words. And the rubber band that is his life has been stretched to dimensions that he could not have even imagined. And that rubber band, though, has a pull to its old form. Why, he asks in the scripture that Alex just read for us, why, he asks, do I do the things that I should not do, and the things which I know I'm supposed to do, I do not do? Why? Why do I, who has experienced grace that is so amazing, who knows just how incredible a life of love is, find myself still doing the things I did in my old life, my former unawoke life, my former tone-deaf life? Why? Why do I do that which I know I shouldn't do, and that which I know I should do, I don't do? And his lament there, his lament as he feels that rubber band of his life that has been stretched to new dimensions, shrinking back to its old form, is the lament of any of us when we strive to form new habits. Habits that will lead to a better version of ourselves, that somehow, despite our best intentions, despite the exertion of our strongest will, the old ways, the ways that we want to be rejecting by our new habits, keep calling to us. Is that not what so many of us are feeling right now, as we find ourselves soon to complete our fourth month of social isolation, something that we could never even conceived of? Think about all that we have done. Think about all the ways in which we have approached and stretched ourselves to new dimensions in those 4 months. Many of you committed these 4 months from the very beginning to use this time transformationally, committed to deepening your spiritual lives, whether it be through new habits of contemplation or meditation or scripture reading or devotional reading. Some of you committed to use this as a time to rebuild your health through exercise or wiser eating habits, to expand your mental horizons, to learn a new language, read books and genres you have never explored before. Some of you had to become tech savvy just to be able to worship, just to be able to work, or just to be able to be the principal of the homeschool that you are now in charge of that you had not anticipated. And when George Floyd, 6 weeks ago, was killed, and protests and uprisings filled the air. Some of you took to the streets. Some of you started reading more about anti-racism. Some of you held up mirrors to your own privilege, and you informed yourself not just on the need for reform, but on the structures of what that reform might be. We have indeed, in these last 4 months, stretched ourselves, allowing these days of pandemic and protest to be avenues for grace, just in the same way Paul lived into that grace. But let's be honest, some days we are tired. Some days we yearn to not have to stretch anymore. Some days we yearn to just let the rubber band come back to its original form. Can I for just a day stop holding the mirror to my soul and stop the self-examination? Can I for just this day stop worrying about the carbon cost of this activity or that activity and just consume in the ways I once did and didn't worry about? Can I for just a little bit of time just give approval to those who are on the streets, but not have to go out and march, not have to change my thinking, just say, good for you. Can I just go out for a little while and not have to wear a mask, not have to stay distant? Can I just give somebody a hug? Can I just sing in a chorus with others? Can I just be in a crowd? Can I not worry about the new normal and just return to the old normal? Can I just let the rubber band relax? Can I, in the words of Paul, for just a moment, do the things that I know I shouldn't do, but for just a moment, not have to do the things that I know I should do? And as I say those words, I know you all. I've been with you all now for almost 3 years. I know you all. I know exactly what will happen. First of all, those words are not words that you will let come out of your mouth. You will only let them rummage around inside your brain. And as you hear them rummaging around inside your brain, I know what you will do. You will take a deep breath. You will square your shoulders. You will plant your feet and you will push on. And just like Paul, you are going to commit not to giving in to those thoughts, but you are going to instead commit to doing the right thing. And just like Paul, I hate to tell you this, you are going to fall short. You are going to find yourself, even in these days of change and transformation, coming up short. Just like Paul, you are going to exhaust yourself trying to carry the load of your perfection all by yourself. So I invite you, I urge you, be like Paul. Stop seeking the answers in yourself alone. Stop trying to carry the weight all by yourself. Hear the voice of the risen one who is calling to you, as we heard in Matthew, through all of our toils and struggles, through all of our best intentions, through all of our perfections, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy, carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and you will find rest for your soul. Remember, a yoke is not the yellow part of an egg. A yoke is the device that we put upon an oxen that as they pull the plow, that allows the work of the plow to be distributed to more muscles in the oxen's body. Or even better, for that yoke to allow more than one ox to be together, and together they share the burden and together they share the pull. Without a yoke, only the neck muscles in the ox do all the work to carry, to pull the plow. And when that happens, the ox is soon exhausted and defeated. It's like, for those of you that have gone backpacking, it's like the hip belt on your backpack. Without a hip belt, all the weight in your backpack is carried on your shoulders and it will pull you backwards and exhaust you. But you put that hip belt on, and when you cinch that hip belt on, all of a sudden the weight then goes to your hips and to your legs, and that big old muscle, your gluteus maximus, your buttocks right there, carries so much of the weight that before only your shoulders were asked to do. On our own, no matter how magnificent the stretch these last 4 months have been, the rubber band is going to want to return to its original form. But as Jesus reminds us in Matthew 11, we are not alone. God walks beside us. Be intentional. Be intentional about being present to God. It's amazing how amazing it is what a few deep breaths can do. To allow God in to those moments of stress and struggle. Be intentional about resting in God, for rest is just as important a part of building new muscles as exercise. And who better to take time with than the one who breathes life and love into every moment? And be intentional about sharing the burden. I share with you this story that in February of this year, as many of you know, Kirsten was quite ill. Many trips to the ER, many trips to the doctor, eventually hospitalization. It was a scary time, and I was trying to carry it all, trying to do it all. And then there were the members of the Church of the Crossroads who stepped in, and you brought me food without my asking. You came in and you ran errands for me. You assisted in the worship planning. You assisted in the worship in ways more so than ever before. And the yoke was slung over my shoulders. And that yoke together was carried by you. And the weight of what we were going through was distributed in ways that I could not have imagined. And I am forever grateful for that. Be intentional. Be intentional about sharing the burden, putting that yoke on with one another. These are the calls that Paul finally understands. Try as hard as he wants that rubber band that is his life, the new dimensions that he has been stretched to, the commas that have become in his life where once there were periods. It wants to return to its form, and he's not happy about that. He does not want to do the things he shouldn't do. He wants to only do that which he can do, but he can't do it all by himself. And so he turns to God to help him to carry that burden, bring it together. And I think about on the night in which Jesus is gathered there at the table with his disciples for that Last Supper. And the words that we hear that are given to us in the Bible about the Last Supper are words that are challenging, and words in which he challenges them to be the body that is broken for one another. But I suspect that there at the table, there were other words that were shared because he knew what was coming. He knew that in a very short time, the task of transforming the world was going to be taken from his shoulders and put onto the shoulders of the disciples. He knew in a very short time they were going to feel lost and alone. And I suspect that around the table while they were there breaking bread and drinking wine together, he reassured them. He reassured them of the days that were going to come, when they would be tired, when they would need rest, that he would be there and they would be there for each other. He reassured them. He reassured them of his presence, and he reassured them that in the task that they were taking of transforming the world, they were not alone, but they were with one another. And with one another, they were with God. And so we do remember, and I invite you all, if you have brought your bread and your beverage of choice, to bring it to yourselves right now and have it available, because we remember that on that night, while he was gathered there, and while I'm sure he took the time to reassure them that he would not leave them alone, he did take the loaf of bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body, which has been broken for you." And in the same fashion, he took a cup and he poured into it. And he said, "This is the cup of the new covenant, salvation, the forgiveness of sins that has been done for you." And he invited everyone to do this all in remembrance of him, that in essence, to give of our lives that others might have life, to transform ourselves that others might be transformed. And he invited them into a community that shared in this together. So in his name, I offer to you the bread that is broken, the cup that has been poured. I say to you, this is Christ's body, which is broken for you. I invite you to take that which you have and to eat it. And this is the cup of new salvation that has been poured for you. And I invite you to drink of that cup. Allow it to fill you. Allow it to remind you that God is present and caring with us and helping us move forward. God's cup of salvation.